Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fly Brother Radio Show on the Industry Entertainment Network. I'm Ernest White II, storyteller and explorer and creator of the multicultural travel website flybrother.net. As part of my storytelling, I've had my travel writing published in places like Time Out Magazine, USA Today, Getaway Magazine, Panorama, Travel and Escape, Ebony, and at TravelChannel.com. I've lived in 5 countries and traveled to over 50, and I'm not saying all that to say that I'm all that. I just want to give you a little motivation, some inspiration, a few tricks and tips to go off and live an amazing fly life for yourself. Today on the Fly Brother Radio Show, I talk to Charles Snyder, native Californian, poet, playwright, actor, educator, and all-around Renaissance man, now living in Spain. Charles's poetry has been published in Abernathy Magazine and a Gypsy's Journal, and just this month, his essay, Negotiating Worlds, Black and White, a piece on being biracial in America, will be published in the two-leaf press collection, Beijing of America. We'll talk all about life in Spain, straddling the color line in America and abroad, writing, self-love, breathing bodies, and a whole lot more. But before that, every week here on the Industry Entertainment Network, we highlight a community partner, either a small business, charity, or community service organization. This week, we're highlighting the Now Boarding Corporation. The Now Boarding Corporation is a nonprofit organization determined to increase annual study abroad rates among minority male youth across the United States. Based in Los Angeles, this organization targets high school teenagers from lower economic backgrounds. Currently, African-American males make up less than 2% of annual study abroad statistics among undergraduate students in the United States, and the Now Boarding Corporation will offer unique opportunities for minority males to embark on culturally enhancing experiences with no out-of-pocket expenses. For more information, go to www.nowboardingcorp.com and let them know that the Industry Entertainment Network sent you. We'll be right back with adventurer and poet Charles Snyder on the Fly Brother Radio Show right after this.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Fly Brother Radio Show. This is Ernest White II, and I'm talking to poet, to playwright, to actor, to educator, to future entrepreneur. I don't know how I'm speaking it into existence. Charles Snyder, man, thank you so much again for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Man, it's my pleasure, brother. Anytime.
All right, cool. So you are living in Spain right now, and tell me a little bit about how you got there. Like, what's that about, man?
Wow. Okay. Well, not to make a it's a hefty story, but I'll truncate it a bit.
Tweet version.
Really, what happened was, I had a friend who finished grad school and went to Madrid for 3 months, and I had thought that she did it under the guise of like a program, but she just went out there just on her own volition. But she had actually guided me to a friend of hers who had done a program to teach English in Spain. And I had actually remembered a young lady that I worked with during my graduate program and my internship at the Western Justice Center in Pasadena, California. She did a similar program where she taught overseas in Spain. And so my mind started to swirl, and I was just like, maybe that's something that I want to do. And so I started talking to people, and it was kind of just like a snowball effect. And I started meeting the right people, and then I applied, and then eventually got in. And so now, 2 years, I've been living abroad here in Spain and teaching. It's been great.
Nice, man. Nice. So where were you living before that? Like, where are you from? Let's rewind to the beginning.
Sure. I mean, I'm a true Californian. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Okay.
All over the East Bay and also the North Bay, from Richmond to Vallejo, California.
So you say hella a lot, is what you're
hella
saying.
Hella all day. You already know we're out here. You know, right. Language, you know, we say hella with everything.
Okay. And
so then I went to undergrad in Southern California at California State University, Dominguez Hills. I was in Carson, California. And so before I left for Spain, I was living in Long Beach, California.
Okay.
And then also that summer before, I was living with a friend in Delaware for the summertime, and just being on the East Coast. So and through those travels, I had a stop over in Miami where I did VONA. So so I was kind of bouncing around that summer before I left for Spain. But primarily, I'm from California.
Okay, all right. And so then, California boy, what'd you study at Cal State?
I studied in undergrad. I studied theater arts and marketing. And that's where I kind of got the playwriting bug, and also acting and that type of thing. Kind of just a comprehensive introduction and training in all facets of theater, which I really appreciated, which I those skills had helped me on different occasions, working in theater professionally for a while. And then I got my master's degree there as well in conflict resolution and peace building.
Okay, so it seems like disparate subjects, but I'm sure that, someone like yourself is able to easily kind of work in the types of skills and abilities that you honed in the theater program with conflict resolution.
Brother, yeah. I mean, conflict resolution is, at the heart of it is communication.
Right.
Whether there's pathways for open communication, fluid communication or not. And so I kind of honed in on that and focused on how theater can be, a tool for conflict resolution and for like restorative justice and stuff. And, by doing theater, it builds, your self-efficacy, which, a lot of times in mediation, for instance, if there's like, a power struggle going on, there's somebody who doesn't have that self-efficacy. And, as a mediator, you kind of have to be aware and sensitive to those things, in the throes of a mediation. So, I was able to bridge, meld the two fields together to create something interesting. So
nice, man. So just kind of it fits in with your life as a creator and as an artist.
Oh, totally. Totally. You know, I think that conflict resolution is a good, you know, I guess if there were people thinking about doing the arts and trying to do some kind of form of therapy or you know, service, I think that going into, you know, mediation, arbitration, some form of alternative dispute resolution is a good pathway, I think.
Okay. So we've got a lot of different avenues that we're going to go down, I guess, in this conversation, just because you've got a lot of different life experiences kind of going on here. So you mentioned Vona, which is, for those who don't know, it's Voices of Our Nation's Arts, which is a wonderful writer's workshop for people of color, encompassing many different genres from, you know, poetry and travel writing to memoir and speculative fiction and many other things. But it was also where you and I met. I was there at the travel writing component. You were there for poetry.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit more about Vona and what it means in terms of your kind of growth and development as, you know, an artist, but also as a man who decided eventually to leave the U.S.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, in terms of leaving the U.S., I'll go that route first.
Okay.
I had kind of been thinking about that 4 or 5 months, maybe 6 months even before I came across Vona. And so Vona was kind of just, I would say, like the icing on the cake or something like that. Or it was kind of almost actually like prepping me for the work that I'd be doing here in Spain, you know, on my own time when, you know, in my writing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of just like a vent of some sort, you know, like
right,
some kind of
right.
volcanic vent that kind of just opened up and was, you know, and since that moment just has helped me kind of just spew out, you know, all my, you know, inner things going on. And so, Vona, what it means to me, you know, it was just a beautiful, you know, it was a safe space for us, for people of color. And it was, you know, there was no hate. There was no division. There was, you know, it was understanding. There was exchanging of stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the fact is, you know, I'm mixed. I'm African-American and white, you know, black. And you know, and then identifying with being, you know, black and then also looking pretty, you know, ambiguous.
Right.
You know, I've had my own little, you know, fights and wars with that. And so, you know, finding spaces of acceptance are important for me. And I will never forget the first day that I, you know, got my stuff together, you know, I was heading to orientation. This one sister, Kira Allen, she gave me the official, you know, welcoming. She, you know, she held me and, you know, my face in her hands, and she was like, you know, welcome home. And I had never like experienced that, not even my fraternity or anything like that. You know, I think that, you know, that was such a really like a precious moment for me, because, you know, my main focus at Vona was to, you know, start, you know, searching, you know, or like, yeah, start to search deeper to write about being mixed. Because I feel like that's one of the biggest wounds that I carry. So, I wanted to find a place where I can write from. And that's kind of where I focused my energies on, you know, throughout that week at Vona.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's important, like you said, just to kind of be seen. And, you know, mm-hmm. Kira and many of the other facilitators and participants at Vona were just people who I felt like understood you without even saying anything, you know.
Definitely.
Just kind of recognizing energetically that you were amongst families.
I gotta comment on Vona, because like Vona was, you know, such a life-changing experience, and it was just 1 week. And you know, it's been what, you know, almost 2 years, I guess. And, you know, I still have Vona withdrawals. It's so real.
Like, right, right.
Bruh, like, you know, it was such an amazing experience. I mean, and, you know, my crew, my poetry crew, we, you know, we gelled. And, you know, we were inseparable in a lot of ways. And, you know, up until the last night, you know, and plus we had Willie Perdomo, and he was such a great influence for me within that week, you know, just, you know, writing about myself being mixed and also, you know, writing about masculinity. And like we were just addressing so many different topics within those four walls. It was, you know, and it called for you to be as vulnerable as possible, you know.
Right, right.
And that was something that, you know, I never had experienced outside of, like, being on stage, you know, so.
Well, certainly, I guess, as a storyteller, you know, vulnerability is our job.
Yeah.
You know, it's what we kind of use as our power source to connect with people via creation, you know, be it the written word on paper or spoken or acted, you know, et cetera. At least that's the way I understand it to be.
Of course.
You know, when you're putting up all these fences and walls, then you can't get to the root of whatever issues are being healed through art.
Exactly.
But okay. So then, I mean, Vona, you know, man, I actually encourage listeners, if they are creative in any capacity, but particularly, yeah, when it comes to writing, regardless of the genre, take a look at it. I'll make sure we have the website information, the link to the Vona website, because they have applications, I think, that are due in March for participation in the summer workshops that they have. And you've had people like Tanana Reeve Du, Willie Perdomo, like you said, Andrew Pham, who else? Evelina Galang. Obviously, Juno Diaz is one of the organizers, DM Jones. I mean, it's just, you know, stellar writers and artists, period, regardless of, you know, race. I mean, they're just phenomenal creators. And so it's, you know, kind of amazing to just be in that atmosphere, I feel like, anyway.
Oh, definitely, man. You know, I remember one day I was in the lounge and Chris Abani was just like lounge. And I got a little, you know, starstruck, and I didn't, like, go there and say hi to them. They were like, "What do you need from me?" I was just with some other poets. I was like, dang, there goes Chris Abani.
Yeah.
Say hi. He's like, nah, you know, he's reading. I don't want to, you know, bother brother, you know.
But. Oh, see, I went up and got his email address. So, yo, bad. I'm joking, yeah, man.
For real. I mean, I added the brother on Facebook, but, you know,
yeah. Well, yeah, all right. So you mentioned, you know, your phenotype. You mentioned being ambiguous, racially ambiguous, which that itself is kind of a fraught, I guess, issue, just because it depends on what people's ideas of race are. You know, I come from kind of a Pan-African viewpoint that, you know, does subscribe to the traditional rule of hypo descent, mostly because I've got people of every different skin tone from coal to cream within my family, and we are still identified as Black or African American, you know, regardless of skin tone, hair color, freckleage, whatever else. So for me to see you, I would kind of automatically think, all right, you know, without knowing you, that's a brother. However, it doesn't mean that everyone sees you that way in the world, and it also doesn't mean that, you know, people even see themselves that way when they're of mixed racial ancestry, et cetera. I mean, it's there's a lot that kind of is packed, baked into the cake, I guess you could say.
Definitely.
And so then how would you say moving to Spain then has helped, or has it helped you kind of continue to work on healing the wounds that you have specifically because of, you know, your skin tone?
Well, you know, I think that in terms of the writing, because the program is such that, you know, you work a minimal amount of hours, and then you're kind of left to to do what you want and will with the amount of time that you have. And I knew that going into Spain that I was going to have a lot of time with myself. And at first that was pretty scary, to be honest with you. And slowly but surely, as time has, you know, pushed forward, I've gotten more comfortable with that. And I guess to answer your question is, like, I've really focused in on, you know, my body, I guess, and writing about my body and writing about, you know, my, you know, skin tone and
phenotype,
you know, being mixed and, you know, yeah, phenotype and stuff like that. And those things have been, you know, really healing for me. Some things, you know, I may send out and some things I may not, you know. It's just been more so just the crafting for the sake of, you know, of healing, really.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, the thing is, you know, there's not much diversity in Spain. I'll be honest with you. It's pretty much a homogenous, you know, country. There hasn't been too much, you know, racial mixture, I think, you know, more in the south, I think. But, you know, it's been interesting because you definitely meet these, you know, some of these Americans who come over here, and a lot of these kids are, you know, fresh out of college. A lot of them are, you know, I'll be honest with you, a Caucasian, and maybe haven't had too much experience with people of color, certainly, you know, people who are mixed. So I've definitely run into the typical, you know, what are you? Oh, I didn't know you were black. You're black? No.
You know, that type of, right. That whole disbelief.
Type of, you know, disbelief, you know, type of thing. And then, you know, the necessary, you know, questioning. And then I've also, you know, talked to some brothers and sisters who are African, and, you know, and kind of, you know, listening to what their ideals of, you know, I guess, you know, phenotype or, you know, skin versus, you know, identity.
Right. The cultural aspects of it, the history.
Yeah. And it's way more, you know, it's way more black and white with them, you know. And I remember I had a conversation with a friend's friend about like skin tone, and she was American, and we were, you know, sitting down talking to, you know, African brother, and she'd asked this brother, like, you know, what do you think he is? Do you think he's black, or do you think he's white? And he was like, well, he's white. And then she was like, see, you're white. And I was just like, girl, you know what I'm saying? Like, don't you know, like, you know, black folks look different back home. We all look, you know, different hues. You know what I'm saying? The diaspora. Is
exactly. Blackness and mixedness in the U.S. have always coexisted. They are the same thing, and just because exactly. of the rules that were put into place.
So, you know, I kind of realized, you know, especially this past year, I think that it's the same wherever you go. I kind of think about this poem that Langston Hughes wrote about his experience here in the Spanish Civil War, and talking about just, you know, racism pretty much abroad is kind of similar to what we experienced back home in the States. And I think that, you know, my job as an auxiliar here in this program, auxiliares de conversación, is to kind of educate people to, you know, the different facets in, you know, of America and what Americans look like. Because, you know, I think a lot of people's perceptions of Americans is just kind of blonde hair, blue eye. But, you know, that's further from the truth, you know. And then to kind of like, you know, provide different people around the world with, you know, my perspective of who I am as an African American, and that we all look different, you know, I think it's really important. So,
right, indeed, man. You know, I actually am definitely interested in hearing kind of the ways that you encounter or that you inhabit the spaces there in Spain. So when we come back after this brief commercial break, I would love for you to tell us a little bit more about your day-to-day there, you know, what you do in Spain, about the program and how people can kind of get involved, and then also just, you know, what it's like to be a brother that is incognito sometimes while you're in Spain. So yeah, man. So audience and everybody else, please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Yeah.
Are you interested in breaking free from the chains of the past and acquiring the tools to change the narrative of your present, your future, and your legacy?
If so, prepare to join forces with successful entrepreneur and black conservative Rob Lester as he initiates provocative and eye-opening discussions on his radio show, Emancipation Rejected. In an effort to mobilize his community, Rob offers a variety of societal views and options for changing the status quo privately and publicly. He also addresses the benefits of conservatism, capitalism, and constitutional rights, all while providing evidences of real, true freedom in America. Won't you join him in this social exploration? Tune in every Tuesday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern on the Industry Entertainment Network.
Brand ambassadors and business owners, the NEN has two questions for you. Are you ready to captivate thousands of new prospective clients, and are you ready to take your brand to the next level? If the answer is yes to both, then the Industry Entertainment Network is here to help you get there. Advertise with the NEN to give your brand the exposure that it needs on a national and international level to a diverse audience of substance and value. The Industry Entertainment Network is a global entertainment platform that highlights the positive aspects of music, film, culinary, lifestyle, and the beauty industries, with an emphasis on social and cultural issues. Our network features several evolutionary and elevating talk shows that are sure to appeal to your target audience at a fraction of the paid advertisement cost. Increase your business's and brand's value by taking advantage of our customer reach today. Contact us via email at www.welcometotheindustry@gmail.com or by calling 904-469-7511.
In the wake of tragedy, a phoenix rises to restore hope needed by many to mobilize and effect the change they seek. In preparation for change in our communities, the Real Talk with Anita Spencer radio show reflects the expertise of author, entrepreneur, culture curator, and community educator Anita Spencer. Her life's experiences and purpose both lead her to awaken, empower, uplift, and strengthen families around the globe. Tune into her show weekly to have your spirit elevated, your mind broadened, and receive the inspiration to build yourself and others up. Listen to Engage in Real Talk to get real solutions to real issues that affect our communities. Wednesdays from 7 to 8 p.m. only on the NEN.
We won't land, y'all. Come on.
Walk right up to the sun.
In hand, every man,
we'll walk right up to the
every
sun.
Woman,
we won't land.
Chef Elliott Entertaining Solutions.
Fans and foodies alike, the moment we've all been waiting for is here. Celebrity Chef Elliott's Entertaining Solutions radio show is in full swing. Tune into the most alluring and entertaining food talk show with Food Network star Chef Elliott Farmer. Join the conversation to get exclusive food event details and gain an all-access pass to interviews with foodies and renowned chefs from around the world. Remember to stock your pantry, pack your fridge, and get your notepads ready for the tips and meal magic happening in the kitchen on Chef Elliott's Entertaining Solutions. Listen live every Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the NEN.
Welcome back to the Fly Brother Radio Show. I am talking to Renaissance Man, Soul Brother number 12, because he's so young, Charles Snyder.
Right on, man. Right on.
You know, you move up. You know, you move up. You move up. The older you get, the longer you've been around.
I aspire to be number one one day, sir. I really do.
You will, my man. I don't know why that came out like that, man. But either way, I'm glad to have you here, dude. So, yeah, Spain, España. You are then over there because of a teaching program where you work as a teaching assistant, correct?
This is true. Yeah, it's a program between, you know, Spain and the States. And, you know, I work on like a student grant, which allows me to be a teacher's assistant. And I work with English teachers here in Spain. the Spanish, and I kind of just, you know, help them out with, you know, navigating the English language and teaching it.
Okay.
So.
And so what are some of the things that you do in class then? Did you have to, or actually before that, did you have to take a pedagogy course or some kind of teacher certification when you went over there?
You know, the cool thing about this program, and, you know, people who decide to move to Spain, you'll realize that it's pretty lax with the with the requirement.
Okay.
You know, I mean, the base requirement is that you have education, and you actually don't have to be finished with your degree, but you have to be in a bachelor's degree program or have had finished a bachelor's degree program. And, you know, obviously it looks good, you know, on your resume if you have some experience working with kids or with teaching, but it's not necessarily required.
Mm-hmm.
So, and even, you know, I think also maybe some people may be discouraged by the language level. I went into this program knowing bare basic Espanol. Like, I'm saying, like, ¿dónde está? And that was it, you know?
¿Dónde está aquí?
You know what I'm saying?
El baño.
El baño, exactly. comida. You know, food.
Right.
You
know? El hotel.
Exactly.
El hotel.
Exactly. Base, you know?
Right. And how is it now? How's your Spanish now?
It's you know, it's okay. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
It works. I would say that I'm more fluent than I was, you know, when I got here in summer 2015, for sure. And, you know, I think more so just understanding more has been the main thing. You know, I'm still working on my conversation skills, but more or less I can get down. So.
All right, you can get down, but you can holler in Spanish, I guess, is what you're saying.
I mean, I'm that, you know, the love language in Spanish, I still kind of work on that. Not to put myself out there too much, but, you know, that's in process as well.
Okay. But I'm sure you've got the winks and the eyebrow raises and all that stuff down, huh?
In the very least.
Okay.
Yeah, that's about all I have, bro.
So. I'm sure it's serving you. I'm sure it's serving you well. So all right, man, we got your, where in Spain have you been living then? You've been in two different places, right?
I have. So my first year, I was living in, Murcia, which is the small elbow, to the southeast of Spain. It borders Andalusia and Castilla-La Mancha, and then you have Valencia and, to the north. And so, it's kind of like this little quaint little puzzle piece. And, honestly, I didn't even know about it until I got accepted because, you know, I'm just horrible at geography, I guess. I thought the whole south was Andalusia. Like, you know, you know, Spain is Andalusia, you know, the flamenco, all that stuff. You know, that's what I thought. But, you know, Murcia is kind of, you know, of that ilk, but has its own, you know, identity and its own flair and culture as well. So it was great. You know, a lot of people there are super outspoken. You know, it's warm, so the culture is such that, you know, everybody's outside, people are sociable. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, I met a lot of great people my first year, which really made the difference. And so this year I decided to go up to the north and, you know, experience a different side, a different, you know, facet of the culture here in Spain. And it's almost night and day. You know, Spanish people, I think in general are pretty nice. And so I didn't expect, anything different here in the north, but because the climate is different, it's been a bit different to strike out socially. It's rainy here. It's chilly. But you know, I live right by the beach, which is really good because last year I wasn't near the beach. So, and that's my main thing. I love to live by the water, but, so, you know, it's different. The food's different up here. It's heavier. You know, people, you know, are, you know, coats, you know, sweaters all the time, you know, bring your umbrella because it's likely to rain. So two different places, two different cultures. In the north here, they're heavy on, you know, drinking sidra, which is cider. In the south, you know, more, you know, summery drinks like Tinto de Verano, and that type
summer
of
wine.
Summer Wine.
All right. Hey, I got the language down, brah.
I know you do. You're the Floridian one, so you have to.
That's true, man. I'm a native Floridian, my man. It's been around since I was born. I would go to Disney World with my family, and there'd be signs written in Spanish, which I didn't know was Spanish at the time, but I was just wondering why there'd be, you know, strange little squiggly lines over the N, or like the letter Y by itself. You know, yeah. Mysteries of life, right?
The letter Y by itself.
Yeah, right? Man. Like, not even thinking about the letter I or the letter A being by themselves in English, right? Yeah. But all right. Did you get to choose then where you wanted to go when you went when the program accepted you?
That's a good question. When you apply, you can apply to three different regions. However, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get any of those regions. I think they're just doing that to humor us.
Okay, right.
So I applied for Asturias my first year, and I ended up getting Murcia, which I didn't apply for. But so it's kind of, you know, you can pick a region, and I think they consider that, but it's really, so if you're a first year, it's really wherever they need you the most, I think. Which, you know, I wasn't entirely mad at. I mean, I was just happy to be, you know, in the air and then landing in Spain. I think it didn't really matter where I went, honestly. But the second year, you kind of have more of a seniority, and you can pick the region and actually get the region that you want, which is good. Because I imagine there's a lot of people who just do 2 years and then go back home or do something else. But I'm going on to my third year and hoping to stay here in Asturias, actually. So
nice, man. And is there like an age limit? I mean, what are some of the other parameters in terms of participating in the program?
For sure. You know, so the education is like probably the main facet. You know, the age thing is, again, probably like a looser, you know, requirement. I remember it being like, I don't know, mid high 30s, maybe 40, the cutoff. But it's been a couple of years since I looked at the application like that. So
okay, so I can still jet off to Spain if I wanted to and be a teaching assistant.
Yeah, you know, and there's, you know, and my program is this one program. There's several other programs for teaching opportunities that, you know, there's programs out there where you can be an official teacher and not an assistant. You know, they have, you know, programs that have shorter stays. I'm here for nine months for the whole school year. And so there's ones that you can do for 3 months, ones that you can do 6 months, or ones that you have a longer contract for, you know, so there's a lot of resources out there to teach abroad. I mean, all over the world, really, if you want to teach English. So, but I just felt that mine was pretty good because they also give you, health benefits, free health benefits. And, you know, that's,
those are
dream,
good.
You know,
that's a dream. Yeah. True.
Yeah. I got asthma, so you know.
I don't mean to laugh at your condition, my brother.
It's expensive, and so I can get an inhaler here for like a quarter of what an inhaler is back home.
Okay, I thought you were gonna say a quarter, but no.
But I did get an inhaler for like 7 euros in Murcia last year.
Okay, all right. I don't know what inhalers usually go for in the States, but I'm sure many of my audience members would, and I am going to, on behalf of them, say that sounds like a really good deal.
Yeah, no, they can be at least 200.
Oh, damn. Okay. Yeah,
if you don't have benefits, so.
Right. Well, you know, health is, I mean, those communist European countries, right, with all their socialized health care.
The devil.
It's the devil. So, what were some of the more surprising things about Spain that you kind of encountered once you got there?
You know, I was forewarned that the pace was totally different. You know, there's siesta, so you know, there's a good part of the day. You know, I would say from 2 to about 6, where people, you know, lunch or rest and then go back to work for a couple hours. So there was this kind of the pacing of the day, I think also the social aspect, you know, back home, you know, we plan to meet for about an hour and then you go about your day. And so, you know, being here in Europe, you know, the focus is on, you know, cultivating relationships. And so, you know, you make lunch plans and it's about a 3 to 4 hour deal. You're just sitting there talking, ordering food, you know, the tapas game, you know, you order some wine. Depending on where you are in the country, you can order a wine or a beer and get free food. Really cheap tapas. So, you know, you go out and you drink all day and, you know, and it's totally accepted. You know, people are drinking in the morning. You know, I would go to work in the morning and see these construction workers like have a shot of rum before they went to work. You know, back home that would be uncalled for. That's uncouth. But, right. You know,
and, you know, illegal.
Somewhere in the world, so.
Right. I was going to say it'd be illegal, too, in the States to be, you know, getting lit. Yeah. Before hammering on that construction site.
Exactly. But, you know, again, it's a little bit different here in Europe. And, you know, and the thing is, I'm really loving it. It kind of, you know, it always, you know, it feeds my day drinker in me. And, you know, and it just, you know, it's great for opportunities to network and meet different people when you sit down for a menu. And you have like a 3-course meal for like 10 euro and you're just chilling, eating, getting full and talking. So
nice, man. That sounds wonderfully luxurious.
It is, you know, but the other side of that is the bureaucracy, and a lot of it is waiting and a lot of it is, I don't know what's going on, and, you know, and learning to be patient. I think that was one of the biggest things for me was really getting my zen on, like just finding my centeredness and, you know, accepting things that I don't have, you know, any control over. Mm-hmm. So, because there's not like customer support here. You can call and complain and things get done. No, that's not how it really works out here. So right. You have to, you know, be persistent, but also understand that it's going to get done at some point.
You mean there's no, I need to speak to the manager?
Nah.
I mean, to
keep real on top of that, brother, like my Spanish isn't such that I can like even ask for that right now. So I'm like, you know, well, you know, God willing.
And the creek don't rise, right?
Exactly.
So then what are some, besides the, I guess, the change of pace, you know, being both kind of something to appreciate, but also something that's been challenging. What other challenges have you kind of experience that were unexpected?
That was unexpected. Well, you know, to going back to talking about, you know, race and ethnicity and that type of thing, I didn't think that I was going to have to do, I didn't prepare really to do so much, like counseling, I would say. And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of people think that it's okay to drop the N word, you know, in when describing Black people because they get influenced by our music or by movies or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I remember one time I was sitting on the couch with a friend of mine and we were watching Forrest Gump. And, you know, that part, what's that part where he walks in behind the girl when they desegregated the schools. Okay. And, you know, he kind of walks into the frame and he, like, you know, Forrest Gump is like totally like, you know, clueless as to what's going on.
Right.
But he'd asked me, you know, were the N-words, you know, treated that bad back in those times? And I literally felt like my stomach rolled into my throat. I was just like, what did you say? You know, like, you know, you can't say that word, you know, like, and
you're not Bill Maher.
Yeah, you're not Bill Maher. You're not the, yeah.
So anyways, an ally. You're not an ally.
You're not an ally. You know, who are you? I just met you. And so, so, you know, I was surprised that I didn't like go off on him, because I think back home a tendency is to like, yo, I'm going to split somebody's wig right now. But like, I realized that it was a teachable moment because this dude didn't really know.
Right. He had no context. Historical background knowledge.
Exactly. And so I paused the movie and I was just like, hey, brother, you know, that's a super derogatory term. for, you know, my people back home. And, you know, we don't use that like that. You know, that's a negative word. And, you know, just trying to give him the, like, backstory of, you know, the origins of where that word comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he really took it in. And I didn't hear him, you know, refer to black people as the N-word from there on out. But then, you know, then you have other situations where I met this one dude who I was going to do some work with out here on, you know, he was going to commission one of my pieces for a book. And we kind of got into a big fight over, like, money, you know, pretty much that's what it gets, you know, comes down to sometimes. And everything that I was teaching him, everything that I was telling him about, you know, my culture, and there was, like, a lot of good cross-cultural things, he, like, totally threw that in my face. And, like, it got really weird. It got really bizarre. But just, you know, the things he was saying about Brother Malcolm and, like, all these different things, you know. So I think that, you know, one of the surprising things was definitely having these discussions about, like, race and culture, because, again, you know, like I said, it's kind of homogenous. There's not much mixture here. And so, you know, there's an influx of, you know, Chinese and African folks coming into the country. And so the Spanish, there's no, like, cultural immersive, you know, programs going on. So people are just kind of flung into, you know, these communities. And I think that, you know, they hear a lot of our stereotypes and films and stuff, and they apply that to the people here in Spain. So, you know, I have Spanish kids, you know, doing the slanted eye things for, you know, Chinese people making fun of them or dropping the N-word in class. It's like, dude, like, I didn't think I was going to have to do so much, like, you know, cross-culture or cultural tolerance training on the low. So so that was one thing. That was kind of like a big challenge for me. And because it could be exhaustive work, you know, like having to, like, tell kids or even school teachers, because, you know, there's another caveat here is that, you know, there's the Gitano people, which are, like, you know, the POC of Spain, and they're
the Roma that we call gypsies.
Yeah. And, you know, their perceptions of gypsies is super bad. It's super low. So, you know, having to, you know, tell people, like, you know, well, this is how, you know, I'm a person of color. I'm offended by these little things that kids do or like how you talk about, you know, Gitano people. You know, I feel obligated to say something about it, you know.
Well, I think it's very interesting considering you're talking about a culture that's built on cultures that are, you know, from people of color. The Moorish culture, which gave, you know, Spain
everything.
Math and architecture, you know, and half of its words. And then you've got, you know, on the other side, the cultural element of flamenco and of, you know, kind of like the hand clapping and all that stuff, which is directly related to the Roma culture. So it's just, you know, also ironic, too, that Spain used to have, you know, more than half of the Americas among its colonial holdings. Yet, the kind of, you know, as you mentioned, lack of awareness, shall we say.
It's kind of surprising, you know, because of all that history. But, you know, they had a, you know, a dictator for some time here, too. So I wonder if it's attributed to that, that dictatorship here, you know, under Franco. So it could be a lot of different things. You know, you go into a lot of these cities like Gijón, and, you know, there's some diversity, but it's sparse. And that's kind of how it is mostly outside of the big hub cities, you know, like, you know, the capital, Madrid, and, you know, Barcelona and stuff. So, you know, it is interesting.
Right. I guess you've been in. Oh, sorry about that.
Oh, no, brother. You go ahead. You know.
Well, I was going to say, and you have been in the smaller cities, like, you've been living in smaller cities in Spain since your entire time there.
Exactly. Now, I imagine those things are a little bit different in the bigger cities, I would hope. But you know, and then also, you know, talking to them about mixture and being mixed, you know, and like having to show pictures and stuff like that, you know, the receipts, I guess. I guess I wasn't really expecting to do that in Europe, because I thought that Europe was a little bit further advanced in that way. But no, you know, going back to Brother Langston Hughes, it's the same everywhere you go. And I think that, if anything, mainly just have strengthened my my self-strength, my self-ideals, my projections, and just who I am, I think it's strengthened it more, and it's given me definitely more confidence to write about it. So.
Right, right. You know, it is interesting because my first experience hearing the N-word was outside the United States, was in the Dominican Republic, where I was doing a study abroad program. And the kid that was saying it, he was just saying, you know, hey, nigga, to two of the guys that were in the program with me. Mm-hmm. Apparently, I looked Dominican enough, but the other guys were, you know, obviously from the U.S. And the kid listened to a lot of hip hop. So for all he was trying to do was just meet these guys, you know. Yeah. So, again, talking about lack of cultural background knowledge and context. But then I'd be in a place like South Africa, one of my favorite countries in the world, and I'd be at a dinner party and hear people of all races just dropping it right and left because they listen to hip hop unfiltered. They listen to, you know, they watch these comedy shows and they think it's appropriate. And that's also not the word that was used in South Africa to be derogatory towards black people. So I understand the kind of assault that you feel like you're under when you're in a situation and, you know, the slur is hurled even unintentionally. That said, you know, again, like it's quite often a teachable moment, but sometimes you just don't feel like being a teacher. So,
yeah. So, you know, it's draining, brother. Like I was talking to a friend of mine here, like the work can be draining, but it's, you know, and sometimes you just kind of ignore it because, you know, it's kids and it's just like, I told this kid like five times not to say the N word. I'm done here. Like I'm just
gonna, right. Right. That's it. You know, you can't do much with deliberate obtuseness.
No.
So that said, I don't want to leave your experience in Spain on a sour note. I mean, what kind of advice would you give to our listeners who might still be interested in going abroad and going to Spain, despite what you just said?
Well, you know, I hope that what I said isn't discouraged, but it's more of a, you know, just be aware.
Absolutely.
Be aware of who you are. Be aware of your history. You know what I'm saying? And be aware that, you know, our history is still alien to some people in the world, you know, and they think that our history is this certain thing that they see in films and TV shows that they get imported. And so it's like...
Like Real Housewives.
Yeah, Real Housewives. They even watch that show about the pawn shops and stuff, bro. And, you know, and so it's like, you know, just be aware of that, I think. And... You know, and I guess the main thing that I really, like, learned here, I guess, for me, because I didn't realize how much of a control freak I was until I left the States, but just being in the moment. I know that's, like, super corny and super, you know, cliche, but really focus on the moment. Focus on breathing. Focus on being open and conscious and aware, you know, and, you know, because a lot of things, like, back home, like, for instance, like, you know, you don't have cops breathing down your neck every 5 minutes, you know. Or they're not even like that visual here. Like I could walk down the street. I can go to school for a week and see like one cop, and not even they don't really harass you here. It's not like they follow people like that. And so you know there's pressures and there's you know sentiments and feelings and mores that just aren't you know really that aren't here versus back home. So I mean, I've been living good out here. You know, I'm not gonna lie about it. It's affordable. I think it's good for the artists here in Spain. You know, it's cheap to live here. It's pretty cheap to get around. And the thing is, Spain is really diverse. Each region has its own like life and its own flair and its own culture and its own food. And so there's a lot to explore here. You know, and also you know just aside from the Moorish history, you know. Prehistoric man, you know, our early ancestors, Homo sapiens. There's a lot of good, history here, you know, of our earlier ancestors. So it's really a ripe place to discover, to explore things. So,
oh man,
I certainly enjoyed it.
Excellent. So I'm about to hop a flight and come hang out with you, bro. You've sold me.
Bro, come on out. I got this 2-bedroom flat by the water. You know, it's perfect. Right. North. You know, we get up the beaches, get some, you know, get some pulpo. You know, it's all good, bro.
Pulpo. That's octopus. Yay. Can't wait.
Right on, brother.
I'm being, you can't see my face because it's, you know, it's a radio show, but. Pulpo ain't my favorite, but we'll go hang out anyway.
No, I'm telling you, but the pulpo gallego, it's going to change your life.
You're
going to be like, I'm a fan now.
You know, I'm open to it. I'm open to life-changing foods. So tell us where we can find your writing, my man.
Sure. So my website is charliesnyderpoet.com. Charlie with an I-E, Snyder, S-N-Y-D-E-R, poet.com. And I have links to various projects that I'm working on. You can find me also at Abernathy Magazine. I have some poems up there. And then recently with Gypsy Socialite, it's a new journal, Gypsy's Journal. I have a new poem up there. So all the links are on my website. You can find me on Facebook as well. So
thank you so much, man. I really, really appreciate it. Talking with you today and just giving us a little slice of life out there where you are. And I think everybody at home appreciates it too. And I can't wait to see more writing, man.
Man, you know, I'm out here crafting, so, you know, we'll see. We'll see if I get something out soon. So.
Do it, man. We need you.
Right on, brother. Thank you so much.
All right, man. Audience, please stay tuned. We'll be right back with the Fly Brother Radio Show right after this.
Loves, and welcome to an exploration into the discoveries of independent talent on the Industry Radio Show. In this space, your Out of This World super hosts, Zakiya Yuwanda and Nicole Lester, will continue to shed light on extraordinary artists while confronting issues that impact our community, locally and abroad. You are especially invited to tune in to the weekly conversation, meet our phenomenal guests, and learn about the happenings that are landing on our radar. The Refuel Industry Radio Show is live every Sunday from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We look forward to taking off with you here on the NEN. Are you a recent graduate, a displaced professional, or a subject matter expert looking for an opportunity? Or maybe you're seeking to advance your career in information technology and cybersecurity? If so, then Lanier Data Assurance Solutions, Inc. is the company for you. Lanier is a professional services consulting firm located in Washington, D.C., Largo, Maryland, and Jacksonville, Florida. We are comprised of highly experienced certified security professionals, as well as subject matter experts in the science of information security and privacy. Lanier has established a solid reputation for excellence by providing superior services to every client. This credible firm brings a wealth and expertise to the profession. If you are interested in managing work, excellent compensation, contract and travel options, contact Lanier Data Assurance Solutions today. Like us on Facebook to get real-time opportunity announcements at facebook.com/Lanier, which is L-E-N-E-E-R, or call 301-476-1844. You can also email us at info@lanier.net. Empyrean PR invites you to seek the highest level of visibility. Empyrean PR and Media Group specializes in total image branding and projection. With our communication abilities and global media partnerships, we guarantee you the image you deserve. Partner with Empyrean PR and introduce yourself to the world, and they will never stop talking about you. Call 202-656-9819 to inquire today.
Welcome back to the Fly Brother Radio Show. As Charles mentioned before the break, you can find out more about his writing and travels at www.charliesnyderpoet, that's charliesnyderpoet.com. And you can find out more about the VONA Writing Workshop for Writers of Color at www.vonacommunity.org, that's vonacommunity.org. If you missed any portion of the Fly Brother Radio Show or would like to experience this session again, log on to www.blogtalkradio.com/welcometotheindustry, that's industry without the I, to listen to the on-demand version of the show. You can email me directly at ernest@flybrother.net, and please like the Fly Brother Facebook page at facebook.com/flybrotherfly. Please share any questions, content, or stories that helps me to help others thrive. Listeners, please join us here next and every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern. That's GMT-4 for our international audience. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Fly Brother here on the Industry Entertainment Network. Have a phenomenal weekend and an amazing week. Ciao, ciao.